Well, he's back. And when I mean back, I mean where it started. When we first met in 2008, he was covering the Ducks and more for the Oregonian. Then a few moves later, he's back at the Oregonian. He's back on the program, still on Twitter at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, again, congrats on the new gig. So how are things going in our topsy-turvy world?
Things are going swimmingly.
It's nice to hear.
I just watched an NBA scrimmage on TV 3,000 miles away and wrote one thing about it. I'm going to write a second thing about it. It's a bizarre, bizarre existence.
It sure is. I guess we should call you Aaron the Cat Fentress because you always land on your feet. But from two-plus decades at the Oregonian, then NBC Sports Northwest, then The Athletic, now back at the Oregonian. So that's four jobs in about 6 years. How rare is it in this business that you never had to move or put up a for sale sign?
It is kind of rare, actually. But part of that rarity is that I've really, really tried to avoid doing that. I think most people are kind of okay with moving around at certain points in their life or for certain jobs. But I've really tried hard to stay in Portland for my kids' sake and my wife's sake. So far it's worked out. We'll see, you know, what happens the next time around. But no, I'm very happy to be back in the Oregonian. It's a lot different than when I left 7 years ago, actually. But it's still a lot of the same people, a lot of familiar faces. So it's been fun. I mean, I've remarked a couple of times to a couple of people that I'm a little ticked off that I can't get a welcome back cake. You know, what's up? So one of the managing editors at the paper sent me a cake emoji to welcome me back. So that's as much as I can get from now. But I think I'm trying to see if someone can at least give me like mail me a gift card to like, you know, bakery or something. I can pretend. But no, it's awesome to be back at the Oregonian. What's funny is, you know, the blog tool is different from when I left. So Monday I was just going through orientation, just, you know, all the rigmarole you have to do as a new employee, and then trying to learn the system to post. I know, you know, some people are like, "Whoa, what was you? You have to learn how to." But it's just a little mentally taxing, all the different things you have to do. So it's kind of a stressful day a little bit. But now I've got it down pat, and I'm off and running.
So I know that you're covering the Blazer beat, and we don't know how long this season is going to end. I mean, it could be over in like 3 weeks. So right. What else is part of the job here? I from what I understand, it's not strictly just Blazers.
Yeah, so my primary focus will be Blazers. And, you know, let's say they don't make the playoffs. They'll be done, 2 weeks into August. I think their 8-game regular season starts July 31st.
Right.
And so let's hope there's college football. There wouldn't be any Blazers action. There'll still be off-season stuff. There'll still be the draft. It'll be a shortened off-season, obviously. They're hoping to play, from what I'm told, they're hoping to have, like, Christmas Day, I think, is the start
right.
date, fantasy. So then camp would probably start early December. But in those couple months in between, you know, I'm going to still be around. I'm not giving up, you know, football and covering football. I'll still be doing football coverage, just not, you know, the day-to-day stuff. Obviously, James Cupia handles that, but and Nick Daschle on the B-words. But I'll still be doing Football Enterprise reporting. I have, you know, a ton of Ducks features that I've been working on in the background, so I'll unveil those at some point. But, I mean, I guess we'll just see how the season plays out, you know. I mean, if there's a true season, then I'll probably make my way to a few of the big games as well to help James with coverage. So, I'm looking forward to mixing in some football coverage as well.
Yeah, at this point, I don't have plans past the dinner tonight. I'm not taking any
right,
for
exactly.
granted. You know, with Portland, obviously, off the West Finals appearance, they had the roster turnover. And, you know, the bottom line is they hit the break or the lockdown at 8 games under 500. But they've got a kind of a unique circumstance, adding two pretty substantial frontliners in Nurk and Collins. So while they have to make up 3.5 games in 8, seems like they have pretty legit reason to be optimistic down this weird stretch run.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, if they were coming in the team that they were when the season halted March 11th, then I think you would look at it and go, yeah, they don't have much of a shot. But when you can add two bigs and one of them a proven commodity in Nurkic, that's huge. So now you've got three with Nurkic, Zach Collins, who have great spin move into the lane today, and then you got Whiteside. You got three rim protectors, three guys who are very aggressive on the glass. They're not soft by any stretch of the imagination. And you have one guy in Nurkic who's a really polished scorer, and Zach Collins who can shoot from the outside. And then Whiteside just cleans up everything. I mean, that's a nice trio to have playing at your four and your five. And, you know, in best case scenario, you're looking at, you know, those two positions. You've got 96 minutes to share between those three guys. Mainly, each of them can give you 32, then you're golden, right? I mean, you don't have much to worry about at the four and the five. And they looked good today. In that first quarter, man, Nurkic had six, Collins had six. They both scored in some nice, nifty ways as well. Nurkic finished with, I think, 14 and 8. Collins didn't score again after the first initial six in the first quarter, but, you know, he's the least polished of the two. He's pretty athletic. He's pretty big. He's a pretty big, aggressive guy, so he's going to sort of be an energizer bunny for them. But, no, adding those two guys is huge. I still, you know, one thing that I have to point out, I mean, they're 3.5 back, but all they have to do is finish within four. And then you get into the play-in round.
Right.
Which is bizarre, right? But then you have to beat the Grizzlies twice without them beating you once. And we all know the Grizzlies are an up-and-coming squad. So I think they have a really good chance of finishing within four. Can they beat the Grizzlies two straight times to avoid losing one and get into the playoffs? I don't know. We'll see. Cross that bridge when we come to it. But then it'll probably all end against the Lakers in the first round. Although I've had some Blazers fans tweet at me, oh, they're tailor-made to beat the Lakers. I'm like, yeah, whatever. So I've already irked a few Blazer fans already, so we'll see how that works out.
That was quick, even for you. talking with Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian. Carmelo Anthony's an interesting case. I mean, we know he had this kind of reputation as kind of a guy who was unyielding. You know, the ball died in his hands. He lasted about a half hour with Houston last year. Then he signed with the Blazers. And it's like now he's Mr. Selfless, worked his tail off getting in shape. I know it might sound simple, but how great of a story has Melo in Portland been?
You know, it's been very nice. A few years ago when he was on the block, it was 2 years ago, and he was kind of on the block, ended up in Oklahoma City, actually. I kind of was, like, really all for Melo coming to Portland. I thought he would have been huge a couple years ago. And then when he fizzled at OKC and in Houston, I thought the guy's done. You know, like, I didn't think he had much left in him. But it turns out he's rejuvenated, and he fit right in with Portland, and, you know, he's you know, a lot of people thought, he kind of got a bad rap, I thought. Like, I would always hear people say, oh, he's a cancer, he's this. And I'm like, when? When has he ever been? I mean, you're a Knicks guy, but I don't remember him ever being necessarily a cancer.
No.
I wouldn't say, I mean, obviously he was, I mean, people say he was selfish. Well, he was by far the best player on a not very good team. Like, most people in those situations have been, quote unquote, selfish. So I wouldn't say he's like a guy who makes everyone around you better type player, but he probably also felt they're giving me a boatload of money. This team's not very good. I'm going to go out and do what I can, which is score the basketball. But I always imagined that if he got to Portland, that he would defer to Damian, obviously, and then he would give you a third option to take some pressure off of Damian and CJ, and that it would work out. Obviously, the problem is on the defensive end. He's never been a good defensive player. He's not going to start being one now. So you lose something there. So I don't think, in the grand scheme of things, he has had a major impact because our record wasn't very good with him, but he's been better than I thought he would be, and he's fit in personality-wise.
Yeah, I agree. I thought, like I said, a lot of people thought it might go the other way, but anyway, let's get off the NBA.
I just never thought he was going to be a bad guy. Like, what do people think? He's going to show up to Portland and say, Dan, give me the damn ball? I mean, that never made any sense to me. Had he played with a guy like Damian Lillard in New York, he would have shot less. I'm not saying he would have played differently, but he never played with. Who's the best player he played with in New York?
Like Tim Hardaway.
Yeah, or Amari for like a week, Noah for like a month. I mean, who did he ever like? So I never for a second believed he was going to come into Portland and be a bad seed.
Outside the NBA, because we haven't spoken for a while, I wanted to hit one NFL note with Patrick Mahomes signed a deal worth $500 million, 20 years after A-Rod signed the first $250 million deal. You hear all these schools of thought, you know, Could he have gotten more? Aren't the Chiefs taking a risk? You know, I think that kid is all that. What was your take on Mahomes getting locked up so long-term for all that cash?
You know, isn't okay, first of all, there's an out in there for him, right? After like 5 years or something?
Right.
I believe. So he's not risking anything by going too long on the years because he can always get out of it and sign for more if he wanted. Two, it's not fully guaranteed, so the Chiefs can always wiggle out of it. Unless I'm missing something, I didn't understand all of the noise around it. It's just because the number jumped out at $500 million. Oh, my God. He's never going to see that $500 million. Or let's put it this way. He's never going to finish that contract. Either he's going to get injured and not be the same, they're going to get out of it, or he's going to kill it the next 4 or 5 years and get his out clause and redo another one. It's just a contract you sign to give him a bunch of money up front. You can spread the bonus, you know, down a ways. Plus, it doesn't kick in right until after this season. Is that
yeah,
right?
it was an extension. So
yeah, it's extension. Yeah, it's on top of it. So I honestly believe that all the noise about it was kind of product of the number, and which is not real. And the fact that there's nothing else going on. So let's make a big deal about Mahomes' contract. That said, let's say you knew he wasn't going to get injured, and you were going to give him 10 years, $500 million. I would do that because the way the NFL salary cap is increasing, so Russell Wilson got 35, you know you're going to get, the next guy is going to surpass that. So Mahomes is going to get at least, say, 38. So I guarantee you, that on a normal circumstances, within 5 years, quarterbacks will be making 50. And I'd have him locked in at 50 for another five. I'm saving money on the back end of that. So I would have done that in a heartbeat because he's not going anywhere. Unless he gets, you know, a major injury, his arm gets yanked off his body, he's not going anywhere. He's going to be great for a long time. Great quarterbacks never stop being great until their bodies fall apart. And he's, what, 24, 23? So, yeah, that's a great deal.
Yeah, there's a reason that you still have Brady and Breeze and Rodgers and these guys who are 42
yeah.
and 40. And, you know, they don't all of a sudden get bad.
Exactly.
I wanted to wrap with one thought on the Blazers. Anthony Simons is an interesting guy. So is Rolex Span this year. He had moments last year, but he only played in like a quarter of the games, and he's only 20.
Right.
How about how his game and the contribution he's making is coming along?
Yeah, he's definitely growing and getting better. His shooting percentage needs to improve. He's still pretty young, and he's kind of in a weird situation because, you know, he probably would have been a top 10 pick had he gone and played 1 year at Louisville. And then he'd be on a bad team where he would get a chance probably to start and play a lot. And it just so happens that he got picked by a team that's got two really good, you know, backcourt guards. So there's not much need for him to play a lot of minutes. So that, and in some ways that slows his development a little bit, I think. But I think in the long run, it'll pay off playing with two guys like that. But from an athletic standpoint, from a sheer, you know, eye-popping talent standpoint, man, he looks good. Like I really believe he is going to, starting next season, will really be more of a factor. And for me, I think you start really thinking about what can I get from McCollum to upgrade at the three or the four and then start Simons alongside Dame. Because to me, I've said this for you, I've said it for 6 years now, I'm keep saying it, they're not going to contend truly for a title with Dame and CJ as your best two players. Two smallest guards who don't play great defense. It's just never happened before. Some people bring up Isaiah Thomas and Dumars. No, they play defense, and Dumars is a great defender, so that doesn't count. Plus, they're backed by one of the greatest front lines ever. I just don't think it's going to happen. They have to get, you know, a 6'5", 6'6", 2 or a 6'5", 6'6", 6'7", 3 who's really athletic and can play D. That's on par with CJ as a player, if that's possible, to be better. And I think Simons then slides in as a starter with Dame. But I do believe he's the future of the franchise, and that was a great pick. Take him, what, 24, 25 a couple years ago?
Yep.
Genius.
All right. Yeah. He's back, folks. He's back, baby. He's back. He's Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian on Twitter.
Oregonian.
Still at Aaron J. Fentress. Congrats, man. I am really happy for you and always appreciate your time. And now we got a bunch of silly stuff to talk about moving forward.
We do. And baseball starting back. The Yankees are on right now.
Right now. You think I've been paying attention to you?
I was wondering why you went silent after you asked me a question. No, I'm kidding. Things are heating back up. And let's just hope college football can happen. You know, that's the big question mark right now.
Oh, absolutely. Hey, man, again, congrats. Okay. Love it. And be well, and we'll talk soon.